From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Before we take up the issue at hand, which is the upcoming 2025 Postal Service Health Benefits Program open season, I'd like to note what postal and federal annuitants should know already, and that is their cost of living adjustments for the 2026 calendar year. 2.8% for those participating in the Civil Service Retirement System and Social Security, while Federal Employees Retirement System annuitants receive a diet COLA of 2%. The respective COLAs are based on the rate of inflation as measured by the Consumer Price Index for Urban Wage Earners and Clerical Employees, the so-called CPIW. The rate is measured comparing inflation July through September 2024 versus the same period in 2025. CSRS and Social Security benefits increase annually by the full CPIW. However, the FERS increase is limited to 2% when the CPIW lands between 2 and 3%, which was the case this year. NAPS strongly supports H.R. 1522 and S.624, legislation in the House and Senate to ensure FERS annuitants get the same cost of living adjustments as CSRS annuitants. The story dominating the news media across the nation has been the so-called government shutdown and how the shutdown may have impacted the 2025 elections this past week. However, despite the shutdown, the Postal Service Health Benefits Program open season will go on as scheduled, which brings me to this Naps Chat episode, where we will be focusing on the Postal Service Health Benefits Program open season. Clearly, one of the most important decisions active and retired postal employees make annually is the choice of which health insurance plan in which to enroll. As the postal community knows well, this is the second year postal employees and annuitants will be participating in a postal-only health program within the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. In past years, Naps Chat listeners have heard from OPM's Jay Fritz and the Postal Service's Carla Kirby. Jay was a six-time Naps Chat guest on the annual Health Benefit Open Season podcast, but he retired from OPM in September, and we wish him all the best on his well-earned retirement. This year, we are privileged to have Kevin Moss, the editor of the Consumer's Checkbook Guide to the Health Plans, as our guest. Kevin is also a commentator on the Federal News Network. Kevin has been with Consumer Checkbook for almost three decades and is an expert on federal and retiree health programs. The guide, which he edits, strives to assist Postal Service Health Benefits Program participants, as well as those in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, to make educated health plan choices during the open season. The guide's online application is available free to Postal Service Health Benefits Program participants through the Postal Plan online portal, but we can talk a little bit more about that in a couple of minutes. Welcome to Naps Chat, Kevin.
Thank you, Bob.
Kevin, can you talk a bit about your background and the Consumer Checkbook?
So almost three decades, that's pretty close. I started in 1998 here at Consumer's Checkbook. It's really the only organization I've ever worked for. Throughout the 27 years, I've worked on our Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees. So Consumer's Checkbook is a nonprofit based here in Washington, D.C. We've been around. Next year will be our 50th anniversary of publishing Consumer's Checkbook. And since 1979, we've published a Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees. And the idea behind it is somewhat simple but complicated in execution. What you pay for health insurance is more than just the for sure expense of premium. You're also likely to have out-of-pocket costs. And the type of out-of-pocket costs you may face is somewhat determined or can be predicted based upon the dynamics of your family, how old the primary insured is, how large your family is. So what we do, we combine premium plus an estimate of your estimated yearly costs. We combine that and produce a total yearly cost, which ranks all the plans from least to most costly, shows you which plans offer you the most value. And that benchmark ranking really can help you narrow down all of the plans that you're eligible for. And, you know, most postal employees and annuitants will have at least 20, if not a little bit more than that, of plans to choose from. It depends a little bit on where you live, how many plans you're eligible to enroll in. But instead of having to go through all 20 of those plans, all 20 of those plan brochures, looking at all those benefits, checking your doctors, your prescription drugs, we've kind of tried to put all that into one tool to make this job a lot easier.
Now, I want to talk about what's going on, particularly at OPM, before we get into the specifics about the checkbook. As you're aware, in July, the Office of Personnel Management's Inspector General issued a flash report about the 2025 open season. Specifically, the Inspector General cast doubt on the OPM's ability to manage it this year. From what you've seen thus far, what's your confidence level regarding this year's open season?
Medium to high. So far, what we've seen, OPM was a little bit late than what they normally are in terms of the release of public use files. Generally, that happens by the end of September. This year, it happened kind of the second week of October. So there was a little bit of delay there. But the Postal Central Enrollment Platform is up right now. And I believe postal employees and annuitants will be able to log into that website. They will be able to see which health plan they're currently enrolled in. They'll be able to change their health plan if they want. And behind the scenes, there's also customer support that should not even be impacted by either OPM staffing level or, you know, the government shutdown right now. This is a separate contract to provide a lot of those help resources that OPM offers both postal employees and annuitants.
When postal employees go online, how should they use the consumer checkbook?
Yeah, well, I think the starting point is always, what is your current plan? And actually, is your current plan still available? And, you know, one thing we can share with your listeners is that this is now the second year of PSHB, and the number of plans is pretty close to what we had this year for next year. There's only two plan departures. They are nationwide PPO plans. It is GEHA Elevate and GEHA Elevate Plus. These are two plans that were available in PSHB year one. They're not going to be available in year two. If you have that plan, GHA would have sent you a notice, probably in October, that your plan is terminating, and you will have to make a positive election this open season into a new plan. If you do not do that, then you will be auto-enrolled in the lowest cost nationwide PSHB plan that doesn't charge a membership fee and is not a high deductible health plan. That is Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Blue Focus. That may or may not be the right plan for you. You probably do want to consider that plan, but I think most folks who may be losing their plan will want to go look at their choices and see, you know, which plan would be the best plan for them. But the starting point is always your current plan and understanding how your current plan is going to differ next year compared to how it works this year. And two important ways that it does differ: the premium. And most likely the premium is going up, but it's not true of all of the PSHB plans, but most of the PSHB plan premiums are going up. And then the other really, really important place that you need to pay attention to are how your benefits may change. And so the benefits can change in your plan from one year to the next. And the best place to see that specific piece of information is the official PSHB plan brochure. Section 2 of that brochure is titled Changes for 2026. And in that section of the plan brochure, the plan will lay out all the major benefit changes, which could be, you know, maybe the deductibles going up or the catastrophic limits going up, or maybe a new benefit is being added, or maybe there's new pre-authorization requirements in your plan. That's the place to go to see how your plan is changing.
Globally speaking, are there any major changes between year one of the Postal Service Health Benefits Program and year two?
I don't see a lot of major changes. And in fact, you know, one small bit of good news, you know, if we think about the premium story and the difference between PSHB and FEHB, while we have a double-digit premium increase for the average enrollee share of premium this year in PSHB, it's 11.3%. In FEHB, it's 12.3%. So it's a little bit less. I think OPM thought at the beginning of PSHB last year that the greater Medicare integration of Medicare beneficiaries in PSHB would lead to lower premium costs. That may be playing out.
Interestingly, about that premium differential, because originally what we suspected was that differential would be much more significant. But in my discussions with folks who've run the Postal Service Health Benefits Program and some of the plans, is that OPM decided to use the same employee group waiver program for Medicare Part D and prescription drug as the Postal Service was required to do, with the Postal Service Health Benefits Plan was required to do via statute. They did it by regulation. Would that be an accurate sort of assumption as to why the magnitude of the difference isn't as stark as we originally suspected? We were talking about like an 8% differential rather than a 1% at one point.
I'm not sure. When OPM released their information this year about what was going on with the premium increase, they referenced the higher average age of the federal workforce compared to the private sector. They also mentioned GLP-1, which are weight loss drugs. And one thing that's true, both in FEHB and PSHB, that every plan that participates in these programs must cover at least one GLP-1 weight loss drug prescribed for weight loss. And they talked about higher utilization of those drugs. They just talked also about higher healthcare utilization across the board. And, you know, when we think about other large employer data that's out there, FEHB and PSHB is kind of in line with a lot of the premium increases we're seeing in all the other insurance markets.
How does the Postal Service Health Benefits Program premium increase compare to private sector plans?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit higher. I think I've seen some large employer data that suggests like somewhere in the 8 to 9% range year over year. But if we look at a different market like the ACA, we are seeing in some cases in the extended premium tax credits is playing into this, but doubling of premiums in some insurance markets. We're not seeing that, you know, in FEHB and PSHB. And so it is high. And this is the second straight year of a double digit premium increase. And the cumulative impact of that means that health insurance is going to cost both postal employees and annuitants more. But I also think it's important worth mentioning that not all plans have the same velocity in terms of how their premiums are moving. So next year, for the 75 plans that remain in PSHB, self-only premiums are actually decreasing in 13 plans, staying the same in one plan, increasing below the average in 35 plans, and increasing above the average in 26 plans. So part of the homework every year is understanding what's happening with your plan. How is the premium moving in your plan? Are you in one of those plans where the premium is actually moving faster than the average enrollee share? Are you in one of those plans where it's slower? Or are you fortunate enough to be in one of those plans where the premium's actually decreasing? I've got two edge cases here to tell you the stakes and how much money we have in play. So United Healthcare Choice Plus Primary East is decreasing their premium self-only 30% next year. This is going to save self-only enrollees $891.
That's an HMO, isn't it?
That's an HMO. It's available. So United Healthcare has two different regions in PSHB. They have a region that serves kind of the eastern part of the United States, a region that serves the western part of the United States, but a 30% decrease for self only. Whereas Medical Mutual of Ohio's standard plan is going to cost 56% more. That's an additional $4,175 in just 1 year. And likely the benefits are no better in that plan than what you could find in a plan that was probably substantially cheaper.
There was an old comment, and I remember this when I worked on Capitol Hill, among the FEHBP plans, that you're looking at different flavors of vanilla, that generally speaking, any FEHBP plan offers a good menu of benefits. Do you think that's still the case?
I think it's absolutely the case. The standardized benefits that OPM mandates, that both FEHB and PSHB plans cover, they're going to cover most of the major healthcare services. Now, there's huge differentiation in terms of the premiums to get to that service. There's huge differentiation in terms of what you pay out of pocket to receive that service. And then based upon your needs, you can find certain benefits available in some plans, but not in other plans. So, you know, IVF, for example, in vitro fertilization, this is something that for a long time was not covered very well in either FEHB or PSHB, but now we have two nationwide PPO plans, GEHA High and Blue Cross Blue Shield Standard, that do cover IVF, but not all of the nationwide PPO plans are covering that particular service. So based on your needs, you see some other things in terms of like chiropractor and acupuncture and maybe hearing aids, preventative dental. There's some of these benefits that are not standardized across all the plans, where there is variation and where if you're looking for that particular benefit, you will have to try to find the plan that's covering that.
Your predecessor, Walton Francis, always used to say that people shop premiums. That is, they look at the premiums, and that is the most important factor in determining what plan they want to enroll in. And I've always, during a conversation I had with him years ago, we were talking about that premium distinction, and you'd say, look where the retirees are. Generally speaking, the most expensive group of folks to insure are those, let's say, between 45 and 65 before you're Medicare eligible. So you want to stay away from those plans. Now we have, particularly in Postal Service Health Benefits Program, mandatory Medicare integration for new retirees. So the plans that have a lot of Medicare-covered employees, also, that will be a deflating factor in the cost. So question, when I shop for plans, stay away from retirees who are not Medicare eligible.
I don't know if it's that easy or that one, you know, that one for one trade. I do think, well, it's interesting. Sometimes I think people shop on premium, but then I also see a lot of evidence of there's just inertia in what you have and people stay enrolled in the same plan. And I'm not sure of the PSHB data because I haven't seen any new information on this, but historically in FEHB, only 5% of federal employees are switching plans in any given year. 95% of folks are keeping the same plan. And when you do that, I mean, it's kind of like, well, the devil that I know versus the devil that I don't know. But if you're in one of those plans where the premium is accelerating faster than the average enrollee share, it's kind of drip, drip, drip. You know, we pay, if you're an active employee, you're paying this premium pre-tax. You know, it's not necessarily money that you see coming directly out of your wallet. And sometimes it's almost like a hidden cost a little bit. And I see, you know, a lot of people, I talk to a lot of federal employees and they're in the, for example, the highest version of Blue Cross or in Blue Cross Standard. And I ask them why they're there. And, you know, there's a few benefits that you can get in Blue Cross Standard that you can't get in the other Blue Cross plans. Out-of-network provider coverage may be the most important one that you get with Blue Cross Standard. And I'll ask them, well, do you go out-of-network? You know, do you take advantage of that out-of-network provider benefit? No. Right. And then I'll go down the list of all the other benefits that Blue Cross Standard offers that you can't get in basic and FEP Blue Focus. And, you know, why do they do it? Well, they're just, you know, a lot of it's just protection. Well, I don't know what's going to come up next year. And Blue Cross Standard is the, you know, one of the more generous, you know, PSHB plans that are out there. So I'll just enroll in that. But you can save a lot of money going down to like Blue Cross Basic if you're not utilizing those specific benefits that only can be found in Blue Cross Standard.
That's interesting because I do think even within the Postal Service Health Benefits Program, the overwhelming majority of participants do participate in Blue Cross Blue Shield Standard. What you're saying, that may not be in their best interest.
It may not. I mean, and it may. If you are, well, if you need IVF coverage, then you're in Blue Cross Standard. If you need and you go and you utilize out-of-network providers, that's one of the benefits that are there. If you need mail order prescription drug coverage, if you need skilled nursing care coverage, Blue Cross Standard is the Blue Cross plan that provides those benefits that you can't find those specific benefits in basic and FEP Blue Focus. However, it's the same in-network providers in all three of those plans. So if you're only utilizing in-network providers and you don't need those specialized Blue Cross standard benefits, you could stick with Blue Cross Blue Shield and you could go down to Blue Cross Basic. And then the thing that I always tell folks every year is you're not making a decision for the rest of your life. You're only making a decision for the next plan year. You always reserve the right in a future open season to switch to another plan if your current plan's not working out for you.
Now, most postal retirees currently participate in Medicare. All future retirees, with few exceptions, must participate in Medicare. What types of considerations should they have when they choose a plan, unlike a postal employee?
Yeah, so really two pieces of advice here. The first is, if you want to stick just with a PSHB plan, you really have to look to see, are you getting a benefit for having to enroll in Medicare Part B? Many of the PSHB plans will waive out-of-pocket costs for Part B services when Medicare is primary. So this is going to the doctor or outpatient hospital, or if there is a plan deductible, many PSHB plans will eliminate all those costs. So you're having to pay that Part B premium, but you're getting something for it, right? The other benefit of having Medicare Part B is that you can use the Part B benefit to go outside of your plan's network to see any doctor that accepts Medicare. Now, you may have to pay the Part B deductible. You may have to pay 20% of the cost of service, depending upon your plan, but it gives you flexibility if you're in a plan that doesn't have out-of-network provider coverage. Once you have that Medicare Part B benefit, you can use that to go outside of your plan's provider network. So job one, the plan that you had when you were working, does it coordinate well with Medicare once you retire? And will it eliminate those out-of-pocket costs for Part B services? So that's the first thing to look at. And then the other thing to look at that most active employees wouldn't know is that with Part B, you now qualify to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan. And there are Medicare Advantage plans that are offered by PSHB carriers. GEHA Standard has a United Healthcare Medicare Advantage plan. That United Choice Plus Primary East and West has one. Aetna Advantage has one. Kaiser, if you live in a Kaiser market, has Medicare Advantage plans. And these plans will have the lowest costs for Medicare beneficiaries that are postal annuitants. And why is that? The makeup of how these plans work, they combine two things at once. One, they're going to eliminate all out-of-pocket costs for Part A and Part B services. So all your major medical is going to be zero out-of-pocket with one of these Medicare Advantage plans. The only real out-of-pocket costs you'll have, prescription drugs, and then things like dental or vision or hearing aids, you may have some out-of-pocket costs for those services, but all the major medical is going to be zero. And most of them combine generous Part B premium reimbursement. So Aetna Advantage, for example, gets $100 a month per Medicare beneficiary in Part B premium reimbursement. That United Healthcare plan, Choice Plus Primary East, their Medicare Advantage plan, you get $150 a month. That doesn't leave much left over of that Part B premium. So how is your current PSHB coordinating with Medicare? And then what are those Medicare Advantage plan options that you'll want to consider?
And those types of choices and how they interact with your current plan or compare with your current plan, that would be available on your online portal.
That's correct.
One of the things that there's a lot of confusion about is the Medicare Part D coverage, a prescription drug coverage, and the Postal Service Health Benefits Program employee group waiver, the drug coverage. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because people, some don't really understand the interaction
Correct.
Between postal.
Yeah, no problem, Bob. And it is one of the differentiators between PSHB and FEHB. And it's really important that people understand this. So for postal, and this comes from the Postal Service Reform Act. Okay, and in that act, they mandate that prescription drug coverage comes from Part D for Medicare beneficiaries. So in PSHB, every PSHB plan for their Medicare beneficiaries, they have what's called the PDP or the prescription drug plan, which is the employee group waiver Part D plan. And you'll be auto-enrolled into Part D coverage. And that's how you'll receive prescription drug coverage for if you're a Medicare beneficiary. Now, to receive approval from OPM, the Part D plan has to provide equal to or better coverage than the prescription drug coverage from the PSHB plan. Equal to or better means that the formulary must contain the same prescription drugs, and your out-of-pocket costs would, worst case, be the same. In many cases, when we actually do the research and we go to the prescription drug search tools, sometimes we actually see better prices from the Part D coverage than we actually see from the PSHB plan. And there is one additional huge benefit of Medicare Part D, and that is there is an out-of-pocket limit to how much you would have to pay for prescription drugs. This year it was $2,000. Next year it's moving up $100 to $2,100. But that protection is there so that your out-of-pocket prescription drug costs will never be more than $2,100. And all of the Medicare Advantage plans that we just talked about also package in Part D into the Medicare Advantage plan. That's how you receive prescription drug coverage in those. So the big difference between FEHB and PSHB is that in PSHB, that is the only way Medicare beneficiaries will receive prescription drug coverage. You're getting it from Part D. Now, you retain the right to opt out. You can choose to opt out, but if you opt out, there is no prescription drug coverage from your PSHB plan if you're a Medicare beneficiary. Now, why would someone want to do that? Well, maybe they want a commercial Part D plan. Maybe there's something that that plan covers that their Part D plan doesn't cover from their PSHB plan. That's okay. You can do that. You could disenroll from your PSHB Part D plan. You can go into that commercial Part D plan. But if you disenroll and you don't elect some other prescription drug coverage, then you do run the risk of a Part D late enrollment penalty some point in the future because you're no longer receiving prescription drug coverage from your PSHB plan. And since there is no credible coverage from your PSHB plan, if you ever have to come back into Part D, they're going to see that gap and you may be subject to that Part D late enrollment penalty.
So once I decline a Postal Service Health Benefits Program prescription drug coverage, you know, internal it, and I opt for a commercial, I can't get back in without paying a penalty.
No, you can. That's if you enroll.
If I enroll, I can come in and out.
Right. So there's a couple of other reasons why sometimes historically prior to this, Part D was something that some folks wouldn't want. And, you know, one is if you live overseas. Now, if you live overseas, that's actually one of the carve-outs here that you do not have to take Part D if you live overseas. But another one was pharmaceutical discount coupons. So if you receive a coupon from a pharma manufacturer, having Part D coverage takes that coupon away from you. And some people were benefiting from that. And so, you know, they were thinking that they didn't want a Part D. But now that PSHB is here, you really have to take this Part D, or you have to go to commercial Part D. I think you really don't want to go without having prescription drug coverage, and it's going to come from Part D in one way, shape, or form.
Last question. What are the key dates that people should be aware of?
Yeah, so key date number one is open season starting on November 10th, and you have until December 8th in order to switch your health plan. And so you have, you know, about a month or so to go through these plans. We have a major federal holiday there that sometimes can disrupt some of this homework, but you do have some time. I really highly recommend taking advantage of all the resources that the Postal Service has available. They have lots of webinars, lots of educational materials, and really spend some time. And really, when I think about this, you know, if we think about the steps involved, see how your plan is changing. Look at the premiums, look at the benefits. Consider maybe if there's some other plans that might offer you some savings next year. And then if you're an active employee, just make sure that you're taking advantage of all the other ways that you can potentially save money on your healthcare costs. So we got to say something about the flexible spending account. If you're an active employee, this is a very easy way to save about 30% on your out-of-pocket healthcare costs. And the same open season dates for PSHB open season apply to FSA open season. You can elect up to $3,400 next year to go into an FSA. And you have to be somewhat careful on your budgeting, because if you over budget, you can only roll over $680 into the next plan year if you stay enrolled. So don't take out the full $3,400 if you think that you only have $1,000 of out-of-pocket expenses. But I'm pretty sure most employees will have some predictable out-of-pocket costs when we think about not just healthcare, but also dental and vision. And there's also a lot of over-the-counter pharmacy items now that are FSA eligible. So this is an easy way to save 30%. None of us can control what's happening in terms of the larger premium story. And if you really like your plan and you want to stay in it, we have to look for other ways to save money. If you're an active employee, and unfortunately, you can only be an active employee and participate with an FSA. But if you are an active employee and don't have the FSA, highly recommend looking into the FSA.
Well, I want to thank you, Kevin, for joining us today.
Thank you, Bob.
Kevin Moss, editor of Consumer Checkbook Guide to Health Plans. And the bottom line is to familiarize yourself with the many options available on the PSHBP website. Read the checkbook, compare, and I want to thank our listeners for logging on today. If you enjoy NapsChat, share NapsChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
And make believe.